Welcome to Torat Imecha Nach Yomi with the OU Women's Initiative. My name is Norma Mintz, and today we will be studying Daniel Perek Zayin, Chapter 7. Yesterday, we learned the sixth Perek of Daniel, in which some of Daryavish's officers want to bring down Daniel, so they convince Daryavish to sign a law that declares no one may petition any man or god other than Daryavish for 30 days. When Daniel is caught praying to Hashem, Daryavish is forced to throw Daniel into a pit of lions. Hashem then performs a miracle and sends angels to prevent the lions from harming Daniel. Daniel survives, and Daryavish punishes Daniel's accusers by forcing them into the lion's pit, where they die. Daryavish then sends a letter to his people, decreeing that they should recognize the God of Daniel. Today, we will begin the second part of Sefer Daniel, in which the Prakim have a very different nature. In each Perek, we will encounter a vision of Daniel that will speak about the future. These prakim naturally lead us to ask the question, is Daniel a Navi? Is he a prophet? This is a very complicated question with no single clear answer. One might think that the categorization of Sefer Daniel in Ketuvim, in the books that are considered the writings, might be proof enough that Daniel is not a Navi, since his work was not placed in the section of Tanakh that has the books of the prophets. But it's important to understand that this is not the case. For instance, when the prophet Yirmiyahu, well, he authored both Sefer Melachim and Sefer Yirmiyahu, both of which are included in the books of the prophets, he also authored the Megillah Echa, which is categorized in Ketuvim, in the books of the writings. So this clearly shows us that the books of Tanakh were not categorized by the status of the author, but by the status of the authorship of the text. That is to say, while Yirmiyahu, a prophet, wrote the book of Echa, he apparently did not do so in a state of prophecy, but in what we refer to as a state of Ruach HaKodesh, divine inspiration. This term Ruach HaKodesh may colloquially at times be used interchangeably with the concept of prophecy, but here it is distinct state from Nebuah. It is not the exact same thing as prophecy. So, how do we understand Daniel? Some commentators do identify him as a prophet, among them Abravanel, who strongly asserts Daniel's status as a Navi by virtue of the striking nature and far-reaching ramifications of his visions, which he feels most clearly, as we'll see in Perek Yud Aleph, in the 11th Perek. However, it does seem that there is a stronger movement that categorizes him as unique and clearly granted with a divine power to receive and interpret visions, but not at the level of Nebuah. Perhaps the most definitive statement regarding Daniel in this regard is it from the Gemara in Megillah 3a. In a discussion of a pasuk from the 10th Perek of Daniel, the Gemara states, Inhu adifi mine, ve'ihu adif minayhu. Inhu adifi mine, de'inhu nivye, ve'ihu lav navi. Ihu adif minayhu, de'ihu chaza, ve'inhu la chazo. In certain ways, they, here the word they referring to the three prophets of Haggai, Zechariah, and Malachi, in certain ways they were greater than he was, than Daniel. And in certain ways, he, Daniel, was greater than they were. They were greater than he, as they were prophets and he was not a prophet. In another way, however, he was greater than they, as he saw this vision and they did not see this vision, indicating that his ability to perceive obscure and cryptic visions was greater than theirs. The fact that Daniel both has his own visions, as is the case in our Perek, and is also able to understand others' dreams and visions, is a God-given gift. But the Gemara seems to indicate here it is not on the level of prophecy. What is more, there is no language in Daniel that seems to indicate that God is tasking him with sharing his messages with the masses, which is an essential component of Nebuah, and certainly those prophecies that Chazal identified as necessary for future generations. Rashi makes this very comment on the Gemara we just referenced from Megillah 3a, stating that Haggai, Zechariah, and Malachi were prophets since they prophesied to Bnei Israel as a result of God sending them to do so, while Daniel was never sent for any single prophecy. In our Perek, Perek Zayin, for the first time Daniel has his own vision. This Perek takes place in the first year of Belshazzar, so we are moving backwards in time as this took place between the 4th and the 5th Prakim, though it is the first chronological Perek among the types of Prakim we will find in the second half of the Sefer. In Daniel's vision, he is standing by the Yam HaGadol, the Mediterranean Sea. The four winds beat upon the sea, and four beasts emerge. If it has not been said earlier, it should be noted that four is a strong motif throughout the Sefer. We have seen four types of things in previous visions, in addition to the four Judean men who were chosen by Nebuchadnezzar and other examples that we will find. So here, the first beast is a lion with the wings of an eagle or a griffin vulture. These creatures' wings are plucked off, and it is made to stand on 2 feet, and the text describes that a man's heart was given to it. The second beast is bear-like. It raises itself up on one side, and it has 3 ribs between its teeth, representative of its nature to eat and devour flesh. Third, Daniel finds a leopard with 4 wings and 4 heads. Finally, the fourth beast is not even compared to any form of an animal. It is a terrifying creature with iron teeth. It devours and destroys the remnants of the previous beasts. It also has 10 horns. And then, a small horn rises and displaces 3 of the original horns. This small horn has eyes and a mouth that speaks self-importantly. Next, Daniel sees thrones set before him, and it states that an Atik Yamin, one who is Ancient of Days, sits in the throne. His clothing is white as snow, and his hair is like pure wool, while the throne and its wheels were on fire. The one who was Ancient of Days then proceeds to make many judgments, with many thousands ministering to him. The fourth beast is destroyed and burned, as are the preceding beasts. A man, described as Son of Man, then joins the Ancient One, and we are told that this Son of Man will rule the world eternally. When the events of this vision end, Daniel is quite disturbed, as we might imagine. He turns to one of the angels surrounding the thrones in his vision, and he asks to understand the truth of his visions. He is told that the four beasts represent 4 kingdoms that will stand before the Kadishin, the Holy Ones, will receive the kingdom that will endure forever. Mefarshim lay out 4 kingdoms, which of the 4 kingdoms are represented in this vision, and they generally understand it in the same manner that they interpreted the 4 parts of the figure from Nebuchadnezzar's dream that we found in Perek Bet, Perek 2. For instance, Rashi states that the lion is Bavel. This conclusion seems well-rooted in the Pshat, and all of the Mefarshim generally say the same. A description of the beast who is a lion with the heart of a man certainly reminds us of Nebuchadnezzar in the 4th Perek, when he undergoes his transformation until he learns to humble himself before God. According to Rashi, the bear is Persia, the leopard is Greece, and the 4th beast is Rome. Ibn Ezra agrees with Rashi's first 2 designations, but believes that the leopard is both Greece and Rome, and the final beast is the Islamic Empire. There is no single tradition for how we should understand these kingdoms, let alone the smaller details regarding the different beasts that seem to represent different events and rulers. There is also some controversy regarding how we should understand the Ancient One. Whereas most commentators assume it represents Hashem, Ibn Ezra in particular says it is heresy to say so, as he takes great issue with the anthropomorphism of God, and instead he identifies it as a symbol for the angel Michael. Either way, Daniel learns that his vision foretells the eventual eternal kingdom of Mashiach. As Daniel inquires further about the 4th beast in his dream, he reveals details that we did not learn earlier, such as that the 4th beast will first defeat the Holy Ones before their eventual victory. In response to this query, he is told in verse 25, "Beyit Yahavun Bidei Ad Idan Beidanin Uflag Idan." And they, the 4th kingdom, shall be given into his hand until a time and times and half a time. According to this verse, once 3.5 units of time pass, we will reach the final godly kingdom. While unclear as to its exact meaning, this verse seems to give some kind of time frame for when we may expect Mashiach. And as a result of this verse, many commentators engage in what is called Chishuv Haketz, calculating the end of times. That is to say, many commentators use this verse as a means of predicting a date for when Mashiach will arrive. This is actually something we'll find a number of times in the concluding prakim of Sefer Daniel. Now the Talmud tells us such a practice is forbidden. In Sanhedrin 97b, for example, the text states, Rabbi Shmuel bar Nachmani says that Rabbi Yonatan says, "May those who calculate the end of days be cursed, as they would say, once the end of days that they calculated arrived and the Messiah did not come, that he will no longer come at all, Rather, the proper behavior is to continue to wait for his coming. And yet, even in the continuation of that very Gemara, there are potential dates for the coming of Mashiach that are offered. Such is the case with the Rambam as well, who chastises those who attempt to give a date for Mashiach in his Igeret Teman, explaining using a later verse from Daniel that the date is purposely hidden from us, though he also goes on to suggest a date. Rav Sadia HaGaon and Rashi are others who attempt to give years that will usher in the coming of Mashiach, and I must inform you that all of their dates have unfortunately already passed. So how do we understand this phenomenon? It seems that on the one hand, there is a sentiment that these projected dates pose a danger for people, as the disappointment can be profound should the dates come and go without the realization of Mashiach. But on the other hand, our sages have understood that in difficult times, people take comfort in the possibility of a salvation that is quantifiable and within reach. So some have attempted to give such dates. We will return to a discussion of this subject in the next parak as well. At the close of his vision, Daniel is strongly affected by his experience. He states that his thoughts have frightened him and his countenance was changed, but he guards the matter in his heart. Today, we learn the seventh parak of Sefer Daniel. This parak describes Daniel's vision of four beasts that are ultimately displaced and destroyed by an elder who appoints a son of man to serve as an eternal king. Daniel learns his vision is representative of four kingdoms that will come and go before the eternal kingship that will begin with the coming of Mashiach. Thank you for studying together the Eloi Nishmat, Malka Esther, Bat Tzvi Yosef.